de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, de Nijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Nilufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
To This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundacion Xaquiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
The sky is crying. Can his letters roll down the street? The sky is crying.
And I see the tears roll down my nose.
Stay. And though it's many years Post World Industries up আপনার জন্য আওয়াজ আর পাগলের কথা
নিয়ে আসছে।
And collaborators. Their clandestine radio stations are the voices of the revolution.
Thank you. Guajira, Guantanamera. Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crece la palma. Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crece la palma. Y antes de morir me quiero echa mis versos del alma. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
Another story for the kids. I'm talking Twilight Zone trash now. The tradition of Ripple Without a Cause and Black Boy Jungle. Here comes bad news from the underworld. Wow. Sally from the valley, face down in the alley, dead on a summer night. Jerry never flied, had so much to hide. Fag hags burned him with two on all lights. Bad news from the underworld. Broken down boys and tragedy girls. Bad news from the underworld. Dreams are cold as rebels grow old. Debbie isn't ready. Hand ups unsteady, dance till the sun comes up. Teddy's claws are super heavy, for bondage he's never ready. Last night at the Gold Cup, he threw it up. Yeah, yeah, bad, bad news. Bad, bad, bad. Broken down boys and the tragedy girls. Nothing. Nothing to the soldiers at the jelly roll. Nothing. They've gone bald up against the wall of double gender sweet surrender. Satan, sleaze, hurry. Levi's and grace hurry. Means mom's burden with a pleasure chest. Gator hogs like wild dogs breaking all the rules as we pass the desk. Bad news from the underworld. Broken down boys and tragedy girls. Bad news. Bad news. Bad news.
Bad news
from the underworld. Dreams are cold as all the rebels grow old. Bad, it's bad. Bad news. Bad news.
Bad news.
Bad. No news is bad news.
Bad news.
How many of you people got in free tonight? Raise your hands. Oh, there must be a lot of rock critics here. That's bad news. Anytime. Bad New York rocker. Bad slash magazine. You're as old-fashioned as downbeat. The fag hags of the world hate you. And you probably think Jethro Tull invented rock and roll. Something dumb like that. It's bad news. Bad.
Dark. Dark. Dark.
Bad. Dark.
Goodbye. He just winked at me from the jungle and then was gone. And when I got back to my HQ, I told them about my night and the battle I'd spent with a big marine named Camouflage. When I said his name, the soldier gulped and a medic took my arm and led me to a green tent on the right. He said, you may be telling true, boy, but this here is Camouflage. And he's been right here since he passed away last night. In fact, he's been here all week long. But before he went, he said, Semper Fi, and said his only wish was to save a young Marine caught in a barrage. So here, take his dog tag, son. I know he wants you to have it now. And we both said a prayer for a big Marine named Camouflage. Quite the way they seem. Whoa, camouflage. This was an awfully big marine. Whoa, camouflage. Things are never quite the way they seem. Whoa, camouflage. This was an awfully big marine.
Make me happy when skies are gray. You never know, dear, how much I soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion, sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
Thank you. Latest spin on the shit we're in, blow by blow. And the more you watch, the less you know. Beyond the 100-yard darkened living room.
Oh.
Belle belle yon la la maman gaton les pendiers. Belle belle yon la la maman gaton les pendiers. Ma il allait parer baba t'allais la ligne nous plein. Ça la fin va parer bayoun avant la ligne nous plein. T'allais la ligne nous plein bayoun avant la ligne nous plein. T'allais la ligne nous plein bayoun avant la ligne nous plein. T'allais la ligne nous plein bayoun avant la ligne nous plein.
Talelali
nous plein, voyou n'avons la ligne nous plein. Mi avan, zaiko. Mi avan,
to hear the Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show of September 28th, 2023, largely a flashback, in fact almost entirely, except for these few announcements at the beginning, which I'm about to give you now. The really all I've got to say is there's a protest coming up day after tomorrow, which would be the 30th, against the war in Ukraine, for which I mean the not just the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, but more important, the fueling of this conflict by NATO and the U.S., and urging U.S. to get the hell out of there, stop funding a proxy war on the edge of Russia, which is actually throwing missiles into Russia. And that's going to be at the town clock starting at noon, going until 3 on Saturday the 30th. So check it out. I will likely be there, sort of stalking about with an audio recorder. Then on next day, I think I'm going to be playing an interview I did with Dylan Werner Christ, who is a ACLU investigator up in San Francisco, who also came down to kind of help out with the Benchlands, although the ACLU's lawsuit, if ever was one, never quite materialized. The ACLU did help put together a lawsuit with the Coalition on Homelessness up in San Francisco, which got them an injunction supposedly stopping the sweeps, but of course simply changed the names of the sweeps, calling them cleanups, and proceeded to continue seizing property, displacing people. Apparently, all this according to the coalition's volunteers who have been documenting this, and which I have not read the reports of. I've just gotten the final sort of arguments by the attorneys who are arguing this case in court. And indeed, there were court hearings where the ACLU and the coalition sought stronger protections, an actual special master they wanted to see appointed to make sure that the police were actually offering, or the social service workers, who apparently are just as bad as the police in some respects, offering shelter that was available and not just kind of vague statements about shelter. Are you interested in shelter? And then coming back, and also not allowing the ACLU investigator to come in close enough to hear what the actual discussions, what was really being offered to the people who were being told to move. And, of course, the whole purpose of the city, understandably the city government, is to at least while appearing to be helping the homeless and maybe even helping some of them, the real objective, it seems to me, is to get them off the streets and so appease the paranoia, the fears, the repugnance of the middle class, the tourists, the residents who just want to get back to a fantasy of how it all used to be when the homeless were driven out of sight. And that, of course, is not so easy for the city of San Francisco or the city of Santa Cruz, for that matter, to do, given the Martin versus Boise decision, even though that had to do with a particular law in a particular place, and San Francisco has no such law. Although Santa Cruz does, and there has been no lawsuit taken against the sleeping ban, which is what I still call Municipal Code 6.36 in Santa Cruz, even though the word sleeping does not really appear in the same way that it did in the earlier Municipal Code 6.36, where sleeping itself was banned between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. Now it's just a whole series of restrictions are imposed on homeless people, and crimes are alleged if they if they're service resistant, I guess is the word, if they are refusing shelter or not in shelter. And actually, you don't even have to review shelter in Santa Cruz to get hauled in under this law, though, frankly, and candidly, full disclosure, I'm not aware that anyone has been cited under this law, though I've heard certainly people being taken to jail for being in a campsite and refusing to move, as Cooper D'Angelo and Russell have been, as you may have heard in prior shows. Anyway, more of this on Sunday. Thursday is my day of rest, so to speak, or perhaps should be. That's been what's advised me by those concerned about my health. So what you're going to hear now is this February 13th flashback. And it involves some clips from the street, from the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, SAFE, as we called it. It's 1 year celebration in front of New Leaf Market downtown, where every Wednesday we went out, or they went out, actually, the musicians, and sometimes I would set up a huff table, and we would serve food, and we would essentially reclaim that part of the sidewalk for a couple of hours, where it was actually technically illegal to be, because there was no way to be 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a fence, 14 feet from the curb. It's still illegal to be there, according to the current law. It's Ordinance 9-point-something at the moment. I'd have to go check it out. Anyway, you'll get to hear some discussion of CSO, Santa Cruz CSO police officer Pam Bechtel's depredations down there. You'll hear this SAFE kind of celebration, some music, Joe Williams, Robert, etc., Umbrella Man Robert, another Robert, and some folks who are just kind of wandering by and getting interviewed, John, the UCSC anti-war activist. Bob LaMonica calls in, and the main kind of point of the show, one of the reasons I'm playing it is it has an interview with former Mayor Don Lane, whom I called Gone Lame because of his failure to push for civil rights for homeless people in spite of what I took as his promises to do so early on. And that Lane and I have continued to have an adversarial relationship in some ways, although we're pretty mellow with each other in this exchange. You might find it interesting. Their call-ins. The issue was not the sleeping ban, but a thing called the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel, which was one of those development projects that Lane and Rotkin and others supported and that a lot of us opposed, and I did as well. It was up near where the Clearview Court used to be before it was the rent control there was destroyed, and we talk a bit about that. Anyway, it's about an hour or more is taken up with Lane and me and also callers calling in, and the rest of it is, a lot of it is the SAFE events at its one-year anniversary. So enjoy it if you can. Go to the anti-war rally is my suggestion for getting something, at least in a token way, marked that you want to see this war end. And look for ways to do it. We don't know the ways to do it, of course. We never do when we set out on this journey. But it's pretty serious stuff. I'm kind of dissociated from my feelings on this, so I can't really... I really should be screaming about it, and I don't feel like screaming. I just feel kind of numb, and that's perhaps part of the sickness. Anyway, that's 12 to 3 on Saturday, the 30th, at the town clock. You can munch food, and I will no doubt be out there, as I said before, interviewing. So if you run across me, I may try to get you to give some thoughts. If you're a supporter of the war, come as well. Educate us as to why we should be supporting a war that's moving us closer and closer to Armageddon and in what is essentially, frankly, a Russian sphere of influence. Russian imperialists, though they are, it's seems like the NATO and U.S. war hawks are doing a lot of meddling and pushing the envelope in ways that we saw almost ended in disaster in the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962 for those of us with long beards and long memories. Anyway, February 13th, 2005. Here it comes. There are a few cuts in it because I had some computer problems in the studio. We had a studio in those days, so don't try to call in, or at least if you decide you want to try calling in anyway. Don't be shocked when you don't get through. If you have any comments on the show, please call me on the Huff line at 831-423-4833 or 423-HUFF. Have a good listen. And coming up next, a bit late, but still here in the studio, finally, I should say, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. Coming up at 10 o'clock, special guest, former Mayor Don Lane, speaking on behalf of, or let us say, in support of the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel Project. Other items of interest, too, coming up. This show concerns itself primarily with civil rights in Santa Cruz, and that's the focus we're going to take, particularly zeroing in on the situation for homeless and poor people. Stay with us. We'll be back.
It is hard to do without a man's smell in the house. But there's something about a man smells different from a woman. More like a horse. But good and sweet. Last night I need a man back in the house so bad I could not sleep at all. And could hardly wait for it to be morning. And the kids get up and just everything to do.
I turn over in bed and I play a game. If you have to have one man, just one man in the house for the rest of your life, who would it be? Now, I would not take the first one. And he's so surprised to find that I had never been before. And I would not take Mr. Big's board either. Huh. Have another drink, girl. Okay, girl, come on now, let's go. But the one I would want to keep, I know who that would be. The one who first took me during my time and I was hurting inside. No, I say we gotta wait. But he touched me so gentle. Oh, so gentle and just relaxed me all out. Now she's flowing, he said. Beautiful, beautiful river. Beautiful, beautiful woman river. And I love him for that. But nobody could ever say anything bad to me about that man. Deep in the night, I remember. There I am reaching for you, wanting to turn to you. That's all I want, oh, so much. Deep in the night, I need you to touch me. Deep in the night.
To a man behind rose-colored glasses in front of the Poet and Patriot, and it's about 5:30. What is your name, sir?
Boof.
And Boof, you're standing next to a man. I recognize your name.
In Congress.
Yeah, and in Congress. Like, it sounds like a pseudonym to me, but I'm not going to comment. Now,
as the fog settles, seemingly, and individuals present themselves naturally, and music seems to cause so many to dance with such joy, they don't pretend to be happy. They just are.
There you have it, a bit of philosophy and perhaps beyond philosophy in back of the poet and patriot. Thank you, Boff, as well as
Boof.
Boof. Goodness. I can't tell my Boof from my Boff.
Beowulf.
And thank you, Incongruous, is it?
Incongruous, yes.
Incongruous or Incongruous?
I think, therefore, I am unsure of what I think.
It's pretty profound here today, or pretty elliptical. You can take your choice.
Maybe why I don't give a damn and have a tendency to dream.
That's all we got today. Good luck, and thank you both.
I don't know if that's a joking thing, but what allows, if we don't share, what's available next?
Something to think about.
And welcome to Bathurst Spears Broadsides. It's February 13th, 2005, and if you want to call into this show, you can. It's an easy number to call in, 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC. We are broadcasting, of course, at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. It's a 3.5 hour, more or less, show, 3.25 hour now. And as I said, from 10 to 11, we're going to have, I'm assuming, in the studio, expecting a special guest, Don Lane, who is an advocate for the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel Project and one who's stood up in a number of public forums supporting it. He's going to be talking about that. And who knows, we may have some dialogue on the phones. We'll see what happens with that. I'd like to see actually a debate in the studio, since apparently on Monday there's going to be a press conference by the opponents of the hotel project, or I should say the opponents of the way the hotel project is being pressed by the city council when it passed at 4-3 on Tuesday, who are asking for more time and a different process that actually involves the community at the beginning in terms of choosing sites and so forth. And we're going to ask Don about that when he comes in to give his perspective, his side of the issue. We haven't had anyone in the studio actually supporting strongly the hotel project and defending the city council majority on this issue, and I think Don will be the person to do that. And hopefully there'll be those who will be able to ask him some strong questions. I want to be quite candid with folks. I'm not impartial on this issue. I do have a position, so that's going to be clear. I'm going to try to be fair, but I'm an individual with a certain point of view. So anyone's welcome to call into that, and that's going to be in about 15 minutes, assuming Don shows up on time. Sometimes it's kind of hard to find the way to our studio here, but I'm hoping. I'm having a little problem with the computer here, so the normal kinds of announcements I would make, I may be a bit delayed. We do, however, have a working phone, which is always a treat. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, would you please ask Mr. Lane how much he's paid to consult?
Sure.
With the new hotel.
Yeah, actually, I think he's acknowledged that already. He said
how much?
$1,200 was a fee he announced at the People's Democratic Club about a week ago, and I think that's repeated in columnist Bruce Bratton's online column.
$1,200?
That's what he said.
That's total?
I don't know. He used that figure at the People's Democratic Club. He said he had been paid that amount.
Yeah, but ask Mr. Lane.
Okay.
Total amount.
And if I overlook it, Bob, I expect you to call in and remind me.
I may.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks. And, yeah, that's the kind of call I'm hoping to get from you folks out there in radio land. So think about that. You might give us a call. In the meantime, I've got lots of catching up to do. I'm going to start with the Santa Cruz City Council of the 8th. And I'm going to apologize because the very nice, clear, crisp, and easily audible videotape, actually, that also has a good audio soundtrack that I was able to get from the Santa Cruz, about the Santa Cruz City Council meeting from last Tuesday, I have not been able to locate. It's, who knows where it is. I had it here last time. Apparently I wasn't able to discern that we had
a video player back. Our video player was stolen by the FCC in, I guess, late September. So since then, we've been without one for much of the time, and that's been sad for me because I do like to play city council tapes. What I have instead is a somewhat worse but still audible tape, which I recorded at the microphone on Tuesday. And what you're going to hear now are a few cuts from that tape, actually. I spoke a lot at the time. I think it's important the public use public comment time, particularly on issues the city council wants to put on the so-called consent agenda, which is the agenda that's passed as a big lump without any discussion, unless somebody pulls one of the 15 or 20 items off that agenda and asks to discuss it. In the past, Mayor Kennedy and Mayor Fitzmaurice and others who have attempted to shortcut, short-circuit, actually I would say censor and repress public comment by putting the agenda items that some of the public have pulled, like myself, at the end of the agenda, hours and hours ahead, which makes it functionally difficult, if not impossible, to speak on those items. This was not the case, I want to say, and give Mayor Mike Rodkin his due. He allowed there to be a three-minute discussion on each item, and that included me and the irrepressible Michael Tomasi. So I'm going to play some of that now. The first item on the agenda was a presentation about sister cities, and it was sort of, you know, one of these fluff pieces where we talk about the wonderful sister cities and how the great things are being done, cultural interchanges, and I had some comments on that, and these are the comments.
Oh, well, this is with respect to what she was saying on something to support her recommendation to you, which I think is what she was mainly addressing, what was the sort of main item on the agenda. And just to remind the council that while it's painless to do that at a state level with state action, and indeed beneficial, I commend the Human Care Alliance for working on that, and I commend the council for doing that. I would remind the council that there are local actions they can take that would also be in line with the kinds of recommendations and policies, such as abandoning autopilot, such as looking for a democratic and fair budget process locally, such as dealing with emissions in the budget, looking for corporate people downtown and elsewhere.
Actually, let me clarify something. When I said that the Sister Cities was the item, I was wrong. This is an item prior to the Sister Cities item. I think that comes up next, in which Karen Delaney made a presentation about supporting state legislation, which would not allow the governor to take such huge chunks out of the budget the way he's doing, which had more to do with budget accountability, which saved social service funding. And I was talking about the importance of doing this locally at the city council level. And that was that, I think, more or less.
That might yield us more revenue in the current budget crisis. I'm not going to belabor it, but the point is, unless we act locally, these kinds of resolutions are largely meaningless. Thank you.
I'm always glad to see international connections because I think we can learn something from talking to communities elsewhere in the world.
That sounds like a man with a very deep voice or else a tape recorder problem, or perhaps a problem in the studio. I'm going to work on all of that and see where I'm at because it looked like the tape was going pretty well. Anyway, I want to remind you that if you want to join this upcoming discussion at 10, you can by jumping on the chat room. That's www.pagesincolor.com. And then you can just click on chat, and you can chat away and ask your questions, and I'll pass them on to Don. You can also call in. There'll be at least one phone line, but as I expect there'll be some calls, you may not be able to get in time on the phone line, so I'm going to try to I'll keep an eye, at least, on the Pages in Color chat room so we can put those questions forward to Don as well. This issue of the Coast Hotel right now is sort of settled 4-3 at city council level, but, of course, as you heard, those who are opposing it are planning a referendum. At least they've announced that. They want to get some, 4,000 to 8,000 signatures that they're going to need of registered city voters to get this on the ballot. And that, I guess, kicks off on Monday at 10. I have a little problem here because what the notes I usually work at off of, which I email to the studio, is not opening the attachments that normally it, well, I wasn't able to use my normal Hotmail, and I'm having some problems with the equipment here and getting these things in front of me. So I'm operating to some extent by memory. There are numerous things happening tomorrow. One of them also is the Homeless Marathon. That's, as I've mentioned before in earlier editions of the show, that's an annual event that happens throughout the country for about, gosh, it's, was it 18 hours or so, starting at 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon. And it's broadcast at 101.1 FM. And as I understand it, talking to broadcaster Skidmark Bob, it's going to be broadcast for quite a segment of it, as long as people want to broadcast. It's going to be streaming as a sort of a default broadcast. And this is a series of hour segments, which different cities kind of chime in, talk about different homeless issues, homeless people, and housed people call in to discuss their reaction to the issues raised in this debate and their own experiences. And actually, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and more importantly, the Human Rights Organization, which has organized it, is having a kind of a computer, radio, campfire get-together. And there's no campfire. It's going to be in somebody's house between 4 and 7, but that's going to be an opportunity for people to talk, to maybe email in inquiries or queries to the folks at the studio. I guess this is coming out of Connecticut originally across the country. And there may even be a Canadian one happening at the same time. Last year there was. It's really interesting. The schedule is online. If you Google for Homelessness Marathon, you'll be able to check out what's happening each hour. I had a copy of the schedule with me, but as I said, I'm not able to access it right now. So I would encourage you to check that out. A couple of other quick announcements. There is a... come in. Hey, Don. Don Lane has arrived. There is a meeting on Wednesday of the, you know, I don't know the exact group, but Bob Tarrin is heading it, and he's talking about the Patriot Act. It's a $7 shindig at May Gardens. You heard about that one, Don? That, no, it's...
Okay. You're going to tell me now.
Yeah, I'm telling everybody here, actually. Sure. It's mentioned in today's Sentinel under meetings, and it's, as I said, it costs $7 or $8, starts at 11:30, May Gardens, and that's on Wednesday. People who are interested can check it out. I've often been concerned about Patriot Act protections, I should say protections against the Patriot Act locally, as, for example, Arcata City Council has passed in the past. So that's a subject of some concern to me, and I know the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which has been sort of playing softball with City Council for the last year and a half or 2 years on this, since the original resolution was emasculated by Kennedy way back in November of 2002. So it's a matter of some concern to me, and I don't know if I'm going to be there. I don't want to spend $7 to check out Bob Tarrin's comments, which I'm sure are going to be fine, and probably I'll agree with all of them. The question is, how do they have any local relevance, and how do we hold our city government accountable on that? Well, hey, welcome, Don, now that you're here.
Thanks.
I'm rushing through some announcements before 10 because I'm trying to anticipate we're going to be taking up our time at 10 with the subject you came here to discuss. And I've already mentioned a little bit about the... some of the background of this, obviously in the past, you probably heard some of our discussion with Ralph Myberg and others on the air in the past.
I wasn't able to because I didn't get a call telling me he was going to be on until about 5 minutes before, and in each instance I was a little bit tied up with other things, so it didn't work out well for me to listen. So
sure.
I'm glad you had a chance to invite me so that I had a little time to plan my visit and plan to listen.
And I'm afraid that you're going to not have as robust a questioner as you might, because the notes I have are not available to me because, unfortunately, I have a computer problem. I'll just have to wing it. But nonetheless, I'll try and give you a hard time.
Okay,
and
fair enough.
Indeed. And also, I'm hoping that others outside will be able to ask you questions or call in supporting commentary or just present themselves and their thoughts on this issue. I guess we should probably start, and first I'll introduce you. This is Don Lane. Hi, Don.
Hello, Robert.
Again, you've got a bunch of credentials. I know that I've seen you working in social service projects as well as in politics for 15 years at least, and longer, I'm sure, since 1988 is when actually I first ran into
right.
you. We got a phone call. Let me see what's happening here. You're on Free Radio with Don and Robert.
Yeah, hello, Robert. This is John. Just wanted to let you know that I sent you the emails in the body of the email instead of as a file attachment.
So oh, excellent. I actually may be able to ask Don a question or two. Thanks.
Huh?
I mean, thank you. That'll help.
All right.
Appreciate that. All right.
That's about it. I didn't really have any questions except to remind you that I didn't want to ask him how much you have paid for his consulting rate.
Right. Okay. That was a question that came in earlier from a listener. I think it was Bob LaMonica, actually, who asked. Go ahead.
No, I didn't hear it. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question was, and it was one you answered to the People's Democratic Club, how much were you paid anything for speaking out and writing out on the issue of the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel?
I was. I was paid for 2 months of work. I was paid $1,200, so about $600 a month. And that's done, that money has run out, but I'm still doing it. And that money came from the coalition that I was working for, the labor and small business and some social service oriented people who are part of that coalition.
So your own position is right now you're not getting paid, your money's run out, but you feel this is something you're undertaking because of your own beliefs.
Right. I mean, in fact, when it turned out when I started working on this, nobody had committed to pay me, and then as I got going, a couple of people said, "Well, would it help? Could you spend some more time if we came up with some money?" And I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to. I am putting a lot of time into it, so it was helpful, but I'm still putting a lot of time into it, even though the money isn't there."
You know, let's begin at the beginning because what we're talking about, folks, for those who don't know, is the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel parking garage, a convention or conference center project, which is a $100 million project, $30 million in city funds. Some say that equates to $66 million if you consider expenditures. But one of the main criticisms about this whole thing has been the process and where it began. So why don't you give your sense of the history of this project, Don?
Okay. Well, I can really give you there's two parts to that, so let's try the long and the relatively shorter part. When I was on the city council in the around, 1990, 91, 92, after the earthquake had happened and the rebuilding got pretty far along, so really more like 91 and 92, there was still work going on, but it was kind of on track. The city council returned at that time to something that had even been prior to my time on the agenda of sort of the long-term agenda of the city, which is how could we improve tourism year-round in Santa Cruz. I think that's kind of one of the most bottom-line issues here, that's been something that's been agreed on by most people. Certainly, I'm not going to claim everyone, but a lot of people have felt like, this is a tourist town. We get a lot of day visitors. Wouldn't it make sense for us to try to have some people who came and stayed a little longer, maybe came at the time of year when it isn't just totally crowded? And that would have relatively minor impacts, and the revenue for the community would be substantial. So that was the background, and then while I was on the city council, we said, okay, well, that one of the best ways to do that is to try and develop a nicer hotel with a conference center, so that conferences tend to happen in the off season. So that was kind of the link between the hotel and the conference.
Was there a focus on that particular spot as early as your term?
Well,
you were mayor from 1988 to 1992. You were
right.
on the council from
right.
88, and I think you were mayor in
91, 92.
Right.
And there was, not any particular focus on any site, although I will tell you that I personally met with the owner of the Dream Inn at that time, which was a totally different company, different person, to talk about this in general terms. Not there was no specific plan, just sort of saying, what do you think about, improving the Dream Inn or doing something, mm-hmm. adding conference facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sort of interested, but they had kind of even more grandiose plans than what we've been talking about now, I think, in terms of redoing the hotel. So that didn't go anywhere at the time, but that particular thing, but there was the redevelopment agency kind of got started thinking about it at that time, and I think it's really been going on and off since then. in various places and various times along the way.
Well, one of the complaints, as you know, and an oft-repeated concern, even by those who favor some kind of development, is that the process has been rushed. I made that comment myself at the City Council. And I guess the question is, for me, can you outline for me the public hearings that have been held on this issue and sort of when they began? We're talking particularly about this specific site, because right. I guess a lot of people favor, as you say, tourism and some kind of development here or there or somewhere else, but they point out that this site has been specifically excluded by, what is it, the general plan, the Beach South of Laurel plan?
I think they are referring to the Beach South of Laurel plan when they say that, but actually mm-hmm. I think they're a little off the mark, because what that plan said is we shouldn't build the hotel on the site that is now the parking lot and would be the parking lot conference center. But that same general plan, I mean, beach plan says that, well, actually, I'm not sure whether it's the beach plan or the general plan says that that site is appropriate for uses connected to the hotel that aren't the lodging itself. So, in fact, having a conference center and parking for the hotel and conference center in that site is totally legitimate in terms of the plan. But should I talk about the my
talk about
the process?
The public process, because yeah. that's a real issue. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I should say that I really didn't get into this particular proposal in any kind of serious way until about November of just, you know, 3 months ago. But what I have read and kind of learned is that it was actually 1 year prior to that, in November of 2003, that the city council meeting as the redevelopment agency, but I think sometimes a distinction is made there that I think is not all that meaningful, because it's the same people and it all looks like the city to them. But they met at a standard public meeting of the redevelopment agency council and had the redevelopment agency staff presented along with the hotel owners, here's an idea. Let's tear down the Dream Inn, build a new, nicer hotel there, bigger, and build parking and a convention.
November 2003.
Right, that was November 2003.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
were you at this meeting?
I was not at this meeting. Mm-hmm. It was, like I said, I wasn't even. I think I saw it in the paper, you know, in the Sentinel
because
at that
I'm
time.
I'm trying to remember.
I
often
read it carefully.
I often get to the city council meetings, not all the time, and I usually talk about issues. Although I don't remember this. I'm not saying you're not telling the truth. I'm sure
right.
you are. It probably wasn't too well publicized at the time, but that was the first.
Right. I was going to say that yeah. I'm sure it wasn't well publicized ahead of time. What was well publicized, I feel, was after the meeting. That, you know, the next day in the Sentinel, then there was a major article about it. So I wouldn't say I know anything about beyond the Sentinel whether there was much attention to it. But generally, I think once something's in the Sentinel, it's not a secret anymore. I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
So
and the next meeting?
So then the next meetings, I have seen someone show me a list of about 12 or 13 other meetings that have happened since then. The things I know have happened are the there's always, once the project got a little further along, and I should back up just to say that from that time, from November of 2003 up until prior to the most recent city council vote, the council voted three different times not to approve the project, but to say, let's proceed. We like where this is going. This is a good idea. Let's proceed. And that was a 7-0 vote. In each of those instances.
Do you remember any of the dates or months when this happened?
I don't, other than that November 2003 was the first of those.
I mean, I know on November 23rd, 2004, and I referred to this in my speech at council on Tuesday, Rotkin and Kennedy came up with another, they gave some money to consultants to proceed to, you know, go ahead with more, I don't know whether it was a cost overrun or more investigation of it. And my critical comment was, I don't know anything about the hotel, but why is a lame duck council voting on this when it's so controversial an issue and so forth? I'm not sure if we're talking about a vote where the public knew they could come and talk about the concept of the hotel and where it was, or whether that was buried in the consent agenda. Were these consent agenda items or were these public
hearings? Now, again, that what you're referring to probably was a small, less publicized item, that when there's steps along the way where just staff time is allocated, money is allocated, for consultants, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, you know, you can't really win with those consultant things, because if you spend the money to have the consultants, people will say, oh, you're spending all this money on these consultants. And if you don't, then people say, well, where's the proof? Where's the research? Where's the evidence that this works? So I think the city's always kind of in that bind, and in the end they say, well, you know, we've got to spend the money, pay the consultants, do the research, you know, present the financial evidence, so forth. So anyway, but going back, I know that another key thing is that the Planning Commission and the City Council met jointly for a public hearing in the middle of 2004. And that was another opportunity for people to comment. It was another opportunity for the Planning Commissioners and the City Council to get more details about what was going on.
So I've gone online there. Here to look for your first reference. And there is a story. So this is – Don is not talking through his hat here, folks. November 16, 2003, City talks of raising beach hotel. It's a story by Curtis Alexander. You can find this by going to the Santa Cruz Sentinel website if you happen to have a computer. And it says city officials and Santa Cruz Coast Hotel owners are looking at the possibility of replacing the aging 10-story Coast Hotel. Our goal, since Councilmember Kennedy is cited as saying he wants a conference center and a hotel there, now we could have a place to do it. The plan recently presented to Coast Hotel owners by the city's redevelopment agency. So it actually was initiated by the redevelopment agency. They went to the Coast Hotel planners.
Right. Well, here's what I mean. You can always choose where to go back to, you know, what the starting point is. What happened was that the Coast Hotel owners in about 2000, more give or take, proposed to remodel the existing hotel, kind of an extensive remodel with an addition of some rooms. And that was eventually died at the city council level. I don't remember the vote. I don't remember anything. But it was the Coast Hotel first said, we want to do this. Here's what we want to do. And the city council said, no, that doesn't work for us. So then why was that?
Yeah.
I wasn't really paying. That was a time when I wasn't really paying attention. I think they were worried that probably all the same issues that are raised now. Well, it's too big. It's too, you know, more traffic.
Northwest Hospitality had unsuccessfully sought approval from the city to expand the 163-room Coast Hotel 3 years ago, which would be 2000, I guess. We want to put something new. Suits, however, Bob Suits is the fellow who was talking. He was president of Northwest Hospitality. City 2, after recently losing the option of turning the historic but rundown La Bahia complex into a conference center, is anxious to move ahead. Private developer has given approval to pursue a smaller boutique hotel at the La Bahia site. A stifling talk of a conference center there. So to sum up the history, and there are other articles which document the fact that there were at least a number of Sentinel articles, and presumably they were about public hearings or issues when it became public in the year 2004 on this issue. So it would behoove opponents of this project, I would say, to call in and point out how and why these public hearings were not sufficiently public, why the process did not involve people at the grassroots level. As, for example, Ralph Myberg has said in the studio. Mm-hmm. I take it you feel otherwise.
Well, you know, one of the things that I kind of look at is that even though there's always different processes that can be used and presumably better processes, that the fact that the city council members, you know, were very informed along the way and that it was in the newspaper kind of creates the opportunity for people in the community to say, hey, wait a minute, or I want to be more. They call their council members, whatever it is. So I'm certainly not saying that this was a project that was designed by the community. You know, that it's not that. So, closer? Okay. It was not designed by the community. I'm not going to pretend that. No one can claim that. I think that's the kind of thing that someone like Ralph might suggest, is that we need, in a project like this, to start from zero and kind of say, what do we want to do?
Because it is a big project, right? Probably the biggest thing Santa Cruz has undertaken for decades. Would that be fair
to
say?
Well, you know, it's a funny, I've heard that tossed around. I think about, like, well, rebuilding downtown was kind of a lot bigger than that in my mind. And
the community was involved in that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But even though the community was involved, you know, when particular projects come along, you know, they come along because the city sees an opportunity and a private party sees an opportunity, and when those things go together, then they sort of walk together to move it forward. And that's kind of what happened here. This, you know, it's easy to look at something like the Depot Park, which is sometimes held as a model of how we can do things well, but that really is a project where there's not a private interest involved that has to be part of it in order to make it work. But this is a situation where really all the opportunity places for the conference center and a nicer hotel are private lands that already have a use, and in order for them to go anywhere, they have to have the owner be of the land and the owner of the building be a part of the deal. And that's kind of how this one works, is that, you know, the opportunity sites for a conference center are all, you know, whether it's La Bahia or the Casa del Rey, which is owned by the Seaside Company, or the Dream Inn, they're all locations where the property owner has to be a partner in it in some way.
We're talking with Don Lane, who's been an activist in the community for two decades, one would say, city council member, mayor, currently on the board of the Homeless Service Center. Yes. What other, you know, plaudits should we give you here?
Well, that's fine. That's good enough. I've been involved in some other nonprofit work. You know, that's another.
And that's actually, I'm going to try to link this up also with homeless and poverty issues, because that really is my main theme on this show. But there are a number of questions that have just come in on Pages in Color. For those who are interested, you can call in, ask Don a question, make a comment of your own for Don to comment on, 427-3772. And you can also jump on Pages in Color, which is the chat room, www.pagesincolor.com. A couple of questions here have come in, and let's see what we got here. Didn't the beach south of Laurel plan specifically rule out this site? That's a question.
I think as I pointed out a moment ago, it did not. What it ruled out is on the what is now the parking lot. It ruled out that site as the place for the conference center hotel, but it didn't rule it out for things related to the hotel. So, I mean, that if you actually look at the kind of all the actions the city council, when they approved it recently,